You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine, proud to bring you a new episode of our podcast. This time, again, it's a behind-the-scenes listen to what happened when Fiona Blaney from Real Plus came back to talk to the Transform Masters Group about how to improve profitability in their businesses. Obviously, in PM, there are many levers and dials you can turn, but Fiona doesn't recommend turning any without a proper budget, and in this podcast, she explains why. Plus, there are some great insights here about hiring a BDM, removing wastage from your business, and why, even in startup mode, you need to keep a record of what you should be paying yourself. There are a few places in this session where Fiona references both worksheets and slides that she had on the day, and if you're interested in getting hold of any of these, you can email her at fiona@realplus.com.au. Enjoy the session with Fiona.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au and Real Plus.
All right, guys, so welcome. Super excited as always to be with the Super Six and the Lucky Six. And I think we're probably even luckier because obviously we've got a few people missing at the moment, which is great for all of you because from my perspective, we've got a double competition going, right? The first thing on the competition is the fact that you're competing with the major prize, which is the winners of Transform for 2017. And then in addition to that, it's who's going to win in terms of the outcomes for your business. From my point of view, today's session, which is all about knowing your numbers, is, and I'm going to be biased on this, that's okay. This is really one of the most, if not the most important session that you will have in this entire competition, simply because of the importance that we actually need to place on our numbers. Now, does that mean that I think numbers are the be-all and end-all of everything? No, I don't. But what I am going to try and help you discover, even just in that first step today, is how numbers actually do underpin every element of your business and your knowledge of those numbers, your understanding of how those numbers influence your business, and your understanding of the leverage and the levers that are available to you in your business through the controlling of your numbers and your activity will actually change the outcome for your business and can change the outcome super, super quickly, okay? Super quickly. And so this information is going to be absolutely vital for you. Make sure you've got your workbooks there. I'm going to be talking pretty quickly as always, and I'll give you homework along the way. Now, when I give you homework, if I say, look for homework, go and do that, know that that is not me giving you formal homework for Transform. That is elements that I think that you really need to go back and have a look at if you want to get the most out of this particular session and get to understand your numbers even more than obviously you do now. And I know that in the last 12 hours, as I freaked you all out yesterday by sending you the property management key numbers sheet, by way of the example, for many of you, you're already waking up this morning with a realization that there are numbers that you don't know, numbers that you'd never thought of having any value in knowing, and you're probably chomping at the bit to understand that a little bit more. So I am going to cover off on some of that today. And of course, for individual conversations, you've got your 15 minutes that if you want to use your phone a friend to call me to go through your numbers specifically, we can set that up. And I know I've got a couple of sessions this afternoon with some of you booked in, so use that how you like. All right, if you haven't worked it out by now, I love numbers. I freaking love them. Like, I am obsessed with numbers. The guys in my office, they will watch me run numbers. They sit there and, number one, they don't understand how I'm doing it without a calculator. They kind of don't realize that you can actually count in your mind. But it's okay, I'm a little bit older. We didn't have them back in the day. So what we're doing is we're I am trying to impart just a snippet of my love of numbers onto you today. And I know that not all of us are numbers people. So typically in the way your brain works, you'll either be, obviously some of us are artistic, but equally some of us are mathematical and some of us are, you know, alphabetical, more in the writing space. I get the difference, but first rule for you. If you don't like numbers, you don't understand numbers, you don't enjoy numbers, get somebody who will work with you that does. Somebody in your business, somebody in your sphere of influence, someone in your five people that you call must love numbers, because if you do not look after the numbers will not look after you. And I will show you why as we go through today. I've given you these sheets. Now, this is a process that I take people through in a much longer workshop. You've had time to go through now, and where you were filling out the third column was what I wanted everybody to do overnight. The reason I got you to do this without any information or prompting from me, the reason I gave it to you last minute, is because I wanted you not to have the opportunity to go searching for the numbers. I wanted you to not have the opportunity to research this information. I wanted you to actually have to think about, what do I have in my mind already as to where I want my numbers to be? So, you know, at the end of whatever the projected date was, and we said the end of next year, my questioning to you was, what do you want the number of properties to be? How many let onlys are you going to be doing? How many will be a number of managed versus new properties will be leased? Like, what's your percentage break up there? What's your dollar revenue, your profit, your percentage profitability? For this instance, we're using property management. What was the gross gain, the net gain, the number of preventable losses? All of this data, guys, I talk about this like being the few weeks or the few months before Mother's Day at Myer. Now, I'll be really terribly politically incorrect. But what does Myer sell more of on Mother's Day? They're selling generic mother-type products. So they're things like bathrobes, their slippers, their perfumes, you know, for the racy husband or partner, their negligees, you know, they're all those things. I know this because I have worked there. These are the things. So they have to go through, they've got to know how many they're going to sell, how many people they need. They need to know what their current stock level is. You know, they need to know what their floor space ratio is available for these items to be put on display. They've got to know their numbers, because otherwise, if everybody turns up to come and buy their Mother's Day presents, and all of a sudden, instead of having 100 pairs of slippers, we've got 5, you know, we're in a major issue. And so as a result, these numbers are crucial for identifying, in terms of the projections, whether or not the goals that you're starting to set are actually going to be a reality. But if you don't know these numbers, your decision-making process is happening by feel, right? It's happening by gut. And if your gut is based on today's figures rather than next week's figures, next year's figures, then our gut is actually going to be out and we're not feeding it the right information. I want you to know what the percentage of houses are, apartments, high density, low density, other types of properties that you've got. In your particular location, there may be some other variances around that. So one of my clients, we measure the socio-demographic of the properties that they manage, because we've got some properties that literally we have to board up in between tenancies because of the theft that happens at that property, properties. And as a result, those properties take longer, more time to manage. Houses typically take longer to manage than brand new apartments, as you would appreciate. Name of your largest client. I'll even go further into that and say, give me the names of your top 20 VIP clients. You should know those off the top of your head. They're the most important people in your business. They're not necessarily your largest clients, but they might be your most influential clients. The number of clients that have 3 or more properties. Why? Again, because if we've got clients, if we've got 100 properties and we've got 30 of them that own 3 or more, Well, those 30 clients have actually got 90% of your portfolio plus. That's going to affect the value of your portfolio. When we talk about the kilometre radius, so it could be 5Ks or 10Ks, depending on your geographic location, how far away from your office are the properties that you're managing? Because that's going to, again, drive time to properties. How long will it take me to manage? Property management, particularly, it's a numbers game. It's all about time to serve. If we can get our time to serve ratio, if we want to get the amount of time it takes us to serve a client down, our profit will go up because we can do more with less. You've got your headcount per property. So what's the volume of properties that you've got per property manager? And then, or not even per property manager, per human in your office. And then what's your sales, wages, the remuneration, expenditure as a percentage of revenue. Now, there's a whole range of other elements that you can go through. To be able to set your goals appropriately, that's your projections. But really what we're trying to work out is, what's today's reality? What's your projection? And what's the gap between the two? And is it actually possible to achieve the projection that you've set based on today's reality? So where we are today, is it even possible to get to the projection that we've set for the end of 2018? We're going to talk a little bit more about that today. But here's the thing. Every minute that anybody spends doing anything is worth something. Any minute that anybody spends doing anything is worth something. No time is free. So for those of you even that are in startup businesses, right now your budget should actually have a cost for you in it. There should be a debt for you per month sitting on your P&L. You might not pay yourself because there might not be the money there for whatever reason, but there should definitely be a debt against the business for what I'm paying for your time, even though you're not physically taking it. Otherwise, you don't feel the pain. You know, just pretend for argument's sake that somebody hasn't taken a salary for a year. And if I went and employed that person into another organisation, I'm just going to throw easy numbers here, but if I was to employ that person in another organisation and I'd pay them $100,000 for the value that they would bring to my business, that person is typically worth to our business $100,000. So that's a debt to the business. There's a $100,000 debt to the business to pay that human for the time that they've spent building it. And it allows you to see it with far more transparency what it's actually costing you to run the business. And your returns on the running of that business start to take a whole new position. You know, I even know when I started running my business years ago, I always had a debt for myself in terms of my salary. Because otherwise I could have gone and worked somewhere else for 3 years and been paid that amount of money. So what's the benefit in having my business from a financial point of view? Obviously, there's other benefits. We'll talk about those. But for my own personal income generation, I need to know what I'm actually worth. So there's your next piece of homework. What are you worth per minute, per hour, per day, per year? Now, of course, as directors of a business, you tend to have functions that you are performing as a director. And those director functions, they are what you are receiving your dividends for, you know, in addition to risk and so forth, right? That's where your profit dividend comes from. And everybody in a business as directors would have some job or function allocation as part of that, typically based on skill set or time. However, the day-to-day functions then within the business, there is a cost for those. So you've got to make sure that you're costing those out. Now, already for some of you, you're feeling a little bit like this. One of these faces anyway could probably describe you when we talk about numbers. And I know that, you know, when we were chatting, you know, some of you are ignoring them, you're asleep. You know, some of them would rather have your face licked by a dog. Some of them, you know, it's kind of like boring. So I want to give you one word for you to be thinking about, and that comes back to my favourite word, which is why. So when we start looking at your numbers, you have to be thinking about your why. I've harped on about this to you when we talked about goal setting, because how you spend numbers, how you manipulate numbers, how you maneuver your levers will all come back to why do you have this thing in the first place? Typically, it's going to be for one of or multiple of four reasons. In property management, it'll be because you're trying to build an asset. Now, if you're attempting to build an asset, there's got to be an asset-based outcome. There has to be the freedom to choose date. There has to be a value piece that you want. It could be that you're wanting to take your business to this next point because you're wanting cash flow. Okay, great. So what does cash flow need to look like? Because if you're saying to me, you know, we've spoken on occasion where I said to you guys about my clients that all wanted 1,000 managements, tap, tap, tap on the keyboard. Can I have 250,000? Thanks. I'll go get you 1,000 in terms of growth. No, you cannot have that. Why? Because the outcome was around cash flow. They wanted that 250 cash flow. That was their ultimate driver. The third point is channel for other income. So from a sales perspective, as an example, you're building your rent roll, 5% of your rent roll will sell each year. You ideally want 4% of your rent roll selling through you. That's a really lovely benchmark number around the relationship between sales and PM and the service levels there. So this whole rent roll could be a channel for other incomes. So I don't mind if you're out there charging 3%, 4% management fee income, because you're using it solely for the purposes of channeling income into other areas. That's a business model, right? It's a loss leader. Maya does it, David Jones do it. All different sorts of businesses have loss leaders that they have that just simply bring customers to them. But that is around identifying that that is one of the methods or the reasons for having that particular division within your business. And then the final piece is ego. So you can sit around the boardroom table and play how big's my rent roll. The men normally do that. They play that how big's a lot of things. But what they're doing there is it's all around what's the size of my rent roll and what do I want that to look like? And that can be from an ego perspective as well. Whatever it is, just own it, understand it, because again, this is going to influence your numbers. Okay, let's talk budgeting. Now, many of you in the process of our initial conversations, I've discovered don't have budgets. Not unusual. Some of you have actuals and you're reviewing the actual components. So what did we actually earn as opposed to forecasting what we're going to earn? For me, it's absolutely crucial to look at a budget, because a budget shows us what is it that we have the potential to earn? Now, you can do different types of budgets. You can have a stretch budget. You can have a basic budget and a more, sensitive budget in terms of it's not too outlandish. You might be doing, let's have a look at last year's figures. You might decide you want to do a 5% increase on income or profitability increase. And so as a result, when you're looking at those numbers, then it's about how do we get to that figure? So how do we get to that sales revenue volume? How do we get to that property management volume? What's our cost centers going to be? And what should our profit be? And making spending decisions based on what's in your budget, not what's in your bank account. Your bank account is not a budget. I would want you to look at your bank account as the third metric for reviewing what your income, expense, and profit is. First metric would be, of course, to have your budget. Second then is our actuals. And then third is, let's just check that that amount of money is sitting in the bank. Because if you make spending decisions based on what's in the bank, you are not forecasting for the path ahead. If you make a spending decision in October based on what's in the bank account, come December, January, which would be a lower period for sales income as an example, in most locations, you are potentially going to have no cash in the bank and you'll end up in a major cash flow issue. things that you're going to take into account in regards to your budget. And I've already started sharing my budget with some of you. I'll show you it again in a sec. So it's the running costs. How much does it actually cost you to run your business every month? The second piece, what are you going to invest in your business to get what return? So when we talk about investment, say, for example, a new business manager or a new business consultant, I see a new business consultant as being an investment in growth. I see a property manager as being a running cost, because our property manager is running our existing business. Our new business is moving for growth. And you'll often see when people talking about percentage profitabilities and headcounts of a number of people in the rent roll, is they'll include BDs or they won't include BDs. And so if I'm not including, I've got three new business managers, do you think my percentage profitability would go up or down? My percentage profitability is going to go down, guys, because I'm investing in the growth of my business. Whereas if I take out those new business managers and anything to do with growth, and I set them up as their own budget with their own P&L, their own profit center, then I'm driving them towards their own results. And that percentage profitability for the running of my property management business may still be high, but my BDs might be running at break even because I'm using that as a growth mechanism. Obviously, we're going to be looking at the income that we're making overall. And then the final thing is, what's the return on our investment? So running costs, is there a piece of our running costs that are actually investments in our growth? What's our income? And then finally, what's the return on our investment? Now, I'll just show up on the screen here a very basic budget that we work with. Running this very simplistic budget, obviously you can take a budget like this, you can put it into Xero or MYOB or whatever accounting software package that you're using. But what this allows you to do is it allows you to see what your forecasted income should be on average month on month, what your costs are month on month. Obviously, this then goes on to show not just wages, but then, of course, the actual physical running costs of your office. And then the final piece of the puzzle is what your income is and what your asset change is along the way. If you want a copy of this, I'm happy to email it to you. Just please email me and say, Fee, can you send me your budget? And I'll shoot that through with you. When you've done your budget, what you're then doing with the budget, and I'd like you to do this mid-month, end of month, and quarterly. So mid-month, end of month, and quarterly. So for those of you that haven't done budgets before, what you're going to do during that time is you're actually going to review three things. You've got your budget sitting in front of you. So we've got our budget, and now here's our actuals. And when we go from the actuals to the budget, what's the variance between the two? What's the variance between the two? And I'm a bit manual like that, so I'll have my budget printed out with me. I'll have the actuals printed out. I grab a highlighter and I go through, where's the variances? So, and more importantly, you think to yourself, well, oh, we're over there. That's okay. That's great. No. I want you to even highlight where you're over budget in terms of income and where you're under budget in terms of expenditure. Because even, say, for example, with property management particularly, if you've got tenants that are paying weekly or fortnightly, you could have a bumper month this month. You start to get a bit excited, but that's because you actually had a five-week month and you've ended up with 6 weeks' worth of rental payments this month. And next month, you're actually only going to end up with 3 weeks, just based on how the months fall. So I want you to know what the variances are, and then you're going to analyze it. So why is our letting fees up so high? Why are our letting fees down? Where's this ancillary income? Hang on a minute, there's no VCAT fees here. Why is that? I remember the guys going to VCAT several times this month. Now I'm going to pull out my activity sheet, the reporting you're getting from your team. And this might not be you. It could be somebody else in the business. It says, we've been to VCAT, according to the team's reports, we've been to VCAT five times this month. which is the tribunal for those that don't know. So we've been to tribunal five times this month. Why is there no income for tribunal? And so as a result, it's constantly managing budget actual variance analysis. The middle of the month is a great opportunity to actually say, how are we tracking? Are we on track or off track to get to where we need to be for this month? Middle of the month, I can affect change. End of the month, it's too late. So if I know I'm only sitting at 25% of my letting fee income, and I'm looking at the amount of properties that are sitting on the vacancy list, I'm looking at new managements coming in, and I'm saying, you know what, we're not going to get there, then I've got to go and find that money from somewhere because I've budgeted for that. Now, the other two things that you would also look at, I'll also get you to look at the quarter. Now, the reason I get you to look at the quarter is because you might have had not such a great month this month, bumper month the next month, average on or on track on budget for month three. And so overall, across the quarter, your budget has rationalized out. And once you've done this for a year, then you'll not only do year to date, but then you'll start looking same time last year. So you can start to see patterns. You'll see patterns in terms of income opportunities, and then we'll staff up during those times. So in Victoria, as an example, there shouldn't be one leasing consultant in the whole of Victoria that's having January off. Because in Vic, or Melbourne certainly, January into beginning of February is bumper time for leasing. Like, I've known people to have 100 tenants come through and open for inspection. So, you know, you start to look at your staffing levels, you start to look at your employment trends, they will all impact in terms of your budget income as well. The next thing is percentage profit versus profit. Again, this is another sit round the table, how big's my rent roll? I couldn't care less what percentage profitability you have. And I know that that's not apparently an appropriate thing for somebody to say when they're talking about numbers. It's an indicator and it's of interest. But what I'm more interested in is what is actually the profit? Because if I could say, oh, I'm making 40% profit, great, what's that? 100 grand in a year, fabulous. Or would you like to make 20% profit and it to be 500 grand? I personally, if I had the option, I'd take the $500,000 payment rather than the $100,000 payment. Now, there's metrics, I get that. My point of mentioning this today is when you're hearing people talk about percentage profitability, don't buy in to the ego associated with some of the discussions around how big's my percentage profit. Buy into what do I want my profit to be? What's my budget and how do I get there? Let's move on now then to value. So what affects the value of, and I'm going to speak specifically to your rent roll today. So there's a few things that will affect the value. So this is what we would call influences. The first thing on influences is that there are elements within your rent roll that will affect the multiplier that a valuer would put on the rent roll itself. So atypically, it's valued based on management fee income and then a multiplier on the management fee income that is suggested to be on an agency agreement with the current rental amount. What will then change that multiplier would be things like incidental fees. So over in WA, as the girls over there will know, there was a massive push towards one fee percentages. So things like 12%, 13%, 14%. We've even got clients on 15% as a total fee structure. I think the initial thought was, oh, great, we'll get, you know, a four times multiplier on 15% because that's our management fee income. Well, no, because there are not then incidental fees that are associated with that. So your multiplier would reduce to offset what would be more of seen as an average or comparable to the normal market in terms of those incidental fee pieces there. Geographic location. So what we're starting to look at here is how long would it take me to manage a property in your portfolio? And there, so as a result, that's then the value that it's going to bring because I'm starting to think about what's the return going to be on my investment. So how far away from your office, therefore how far away from my office then as a potential purchaser, and this will start to come into the negotiations. But how far away are all of those properties? What about multiple owners? We're starting to talk about risk here. So how risky is it to actually take on this portfolio? I've got a client at the moment. It's a small rent roll we're buying. It's about 92 properties. So looking at vacancy rate. So you might very well have 100 properties on your rent roll, but you're running at a 10% vacancy rate. So then as a result, I'm actually not going to get a full year's worth of income on those properties, which would then adjust what the value is of them. Rent arrears, if your tenants, you know, if you've got a high rent arrears issue, again, time to manage going to change. The second last piece there, which is a little more ambiguous, valuers are not so concerned with this, but certainly as a consultant doing a due diligence on your rent roll and making some advisement to my client as to whether or not they should buy your rent roll and what value we should put on it, will be around how you service that rent roll right now and what the transition for those clients and the risk for those clientele would be for them coming into our organisation. So the most classic example I can give you was we bought a rent roll almost sight unseen of about 400 managements in Sydney, and the owner of that business had been there for in excess of 30 years. And there were clients that he would hand deliver the statements to and have a cup of tea each month. The purchaser of that rent roll was a paperless, fully automatic email internet-based business. So you can imagine the differential in terms of service offerings between those two, you know, just as an example, and that would influence the risk factor. The last one there is cleanliness. Now, cleanliness of your rent roll can excite me to buy it. So if you're off buying a rent roll, I can get excited about a dirty rent roll. kind of sounds a bit wrong, doesn't it? But as the reason I'm getting excited about it is because it's the amount of opportunity that is in it in order to wow the clientele, and then the opportunity to gain greater momentum, clean it up, get it into my rent roll, and obviously make a greater income flow from that going forward. That's in terms of the value piece. Now, you want to make sure in terms of your value that you are always ready to sell. Always. A ready-to-sell business is a very clean business. Why do you need to be ready to sell? Touch wood. You don't know what's going to happen today, tomorrow, next week, next month, to you, your team, your family, the market. So you want to make sure you are always ready to sell. It gives you options. And the last piece of the puzzle is size does matter. I had a regional client. I've got about 1,500 managements, probably the biggest agency within 100 Ks of their office. The problem, who's going to buy them? So when you're setting up your rent roll, it's equally about who is actually going to buy me out and when. And we mentioned when we were talking about goal setting is a freedom to choose date. And there's different structures that you can set your business up within in terms of, you know, creating micro rent rolls within a larger rent roll. So you might have 1,000 managements, but you've got running under 10 different companies still trading as the same business, as an example. They might be geographically related. They might be property style related. So you can pick them up and sell them off if you needed to. Again, ready to sell. Just making life a bit easier there for yourself. Now, we already talked briefly about your worth, so I won't focus too much on that now, but what I will just simply say to you is to be considering what is your highest and best use. What are you best at? What is going to be the most value? So if I was an investor in your business, and I'm coming in and I'm seeing that you're sitting there. I was coaching a guy yesterday and he's putting on all these people around him. And it's like he keeps leaving with himself the most basic administrative functions. And I kept saying to him, what is your highest and best use? And are we actually getting the best return on your time right now? And you remember, if we go back to the first day we were together, this is the thing that Trent Shawland said was the most valuable piece for him, was actually working out that time, his time was worth money. What was that dollar value going to be per hour? making sure that he was getting an adequate return on that investment of time and money, and then equally ensuring that every day he was working towards his highest and best use. Now, of course, you're not going to get that every day. Some of you are in startup mode, okay? You know, we've all worked, me too, in my spare room at home with my UGG boots on, you know, and we're jack of all trades doing everything. But it's that's why the why is important, looking at where do you want it to go, what's that next step, what's your highest and best use, and therefore, who is this next person that we're bringing in? And there'll be some other financial parameters around that as well. All right, so talking about next step, let's turn our minds now to growth and numbers around growth. What are the various options that we have to grow our rent rolls? So, of course, we know there are typically two options that we know of, organic and acquisition. So organic being the natural methodology around growing a rent roll through human sweat, if you like, and work and effort. And certainly then the second is acquisition, which is around buying a rent roll. My rule of thumb is that I don't allow my clients, if I can be so bold as to say this, you can imagine what it's like to work with me, can't you? I say to my clients, you are not acquiring unless you have an organic strategy to run alongside it. Acquisition on its own is very dangerous. You need an enormously strong strategy and business machine in order to work strictly with acquisition. Now, this is why numbers are important. Let me explain. So if you have 100 managements, you go and buy 100 managements. Every year you'll lose between 10 and 15% of them. It's called natural attrition. So every year you will lose on 100 between 10 and 15. The next year, you're going to lose, let's pretend it was 10%. The next year, you're going to, again, lose between 10 and 15 of the 90. And as the time goes on, the percentage probably of that original 100 would more than likely increase, okay, because of the natural turnover of property sales, move-in, etc. Now, as a result, one could safely say that in 7 years' time, the rent roll that you've just bought for 100 properties, do you still have those 100 properties? No, right? They're gone. But we've gone and bought that rent roll. So it's what we do with that rent roll that we've bought, what opportunities we take, what cash flow we take, what branding we take, what market share we take, in order to make sure that we are organically replacing those that we are naturally using throughout the lifetime of that rent roll. As a result then, we then start to look to an organic strategy. Now, I lose my brain about this particular spreadsheet. I know I'm an idiot, but let me tell you, you will freaking love this spreadsheet as well. I'll send it to you. Now, this spreadsheet shows you the cost and return on a new business manager in your office. Now, I'm taking this spreadsheet as the suggestion that you're not going and buying or requiring more office space in order to bring on this new business manager. Okay, there's already a desk in the office, all the overheads. So you know how we talked about budget funnels, okay, and moving the P&Ls and breaking it down into silos? Once you've got that there and you've got your core base, every time you bring another person in, yes, that will shift. Okay, so yes, the op allocation will shift. But at that point, you are actually robbing Peter to pay Paul. So if you end up with 10 people in PM and 5 in sales, right, so you've got a 66% weighting ops cost on PM and a 33% weighting of ops cost on sales, yes, our weighting in PM is increasing, but we're technically only marginally spending more money from the overall business. So if it was costing us 100 grand a month to run the company before and we were apportioning 33 to sales and, well, let's say 40 to sales and 60 to PM, and now we're apportioning 33 to sales and 66 to PM, we're still only spending 100 grand. Is everybody with me? Right? I know this is, we have to work on this one together. But you'll see here, that's why I've not included on this sheet any other operational additional cost for a BDM. Yes, you'll have some marketing expenditure. Yes, you'll have a phone. You know, there might be a slight change in your insurance premiums, but marginal, right? Not big enough that it would warrant a massive inference on here. You'll see that I've gone 5 new managements a month. That's it, 5. I've then said on a rent roll, $500 a week, average management fee of 5.8%. It's going to give me an average income per month, $126. Then I've got annualized management fee income. So I'm making $1,500 for this property every time I add a new one to the pile. I'm doing a 1.5 week let fee, so I'm $750. My average case value then for that month. So for the 5 properties that I'm bringing in, I've added 11 grand to my revenue line over the next 12 months. I've accounted for a couple of lost, right? Nothing major because we've only brought on 55, 65. Now I've said down here, I'm going to pay this person 6 grand a month. I'm going to give them 10% com. So this person's going to cost me 85 grand. Just using colloquial figures, okay? This is all adjustable. So you'll see here, across the year, this person does 5 properties per month. As we keep adding the management fee income, it's cost me $3,800 to bring on 60 managements. I've had to cash flow it, but it's only cost me $3,800. Is anybody getting excited about this? That won't include your time. You know, so any time and energy and effort that you've got to put in, and it would not include a desk cost allocation because I've gone with the assumption that we're already paying for that. So we're just giving them a chair and there's a desk. And there obviously may be some additional marketing costs that you might want to put in place or some sales commission income that you might want to put in place in order to, you know, entice your salespeople to refer business across to them. The next one is the activity. So in regards to activity, I want you to start monitoring 2 sets of numbers. The first, as I've just already started mentioning there, is the acquisition of business. What are the activity that it takes to get the result? So how many contacts, how many calls, how many meet and greets, how many appraisals, how many in the pipeline to get what result? And then the second one is, what are all the activity points around servicing the business? So you've seen these in KPIs, you've now got access to Real Plus. So if you go into the HR section of Real Plus, and there's also a learning webinar on KPIs there as well, key performance indicators. The KPIs are not about remuneration, they're about performance. So what should maintenance look like? Lease renewals, rent reviews, routines, vacates, arrears. You know, what is the service piece around all of this and how long does it take to serve? So I want you to know the numbers of each portfolio that you have in your business and what should that activity be each month for you to know that we're providing the service that we've told our clients we're going to provide. That's when we can start to control the levels around activity. Next one, wastage, just to finish off for today. As you know, at ARPM, I talked about business sustainability. And around in your business, what do you need to avoid, reduce, recycle, and reuse? So in terms of increasing sustainability, what I actually want to turn this into is what do you need to do in regards to wastage? There is a huge amount of wasted time. You will see that in your activity. I've got a client of mine cracked it one day because somebody's routine inspections weren't up to date and shifted it from being 3 inspections to being 4 inspections. Now on an 800 per year, on an 800 portfolio, if every inspection takes us 30 minutes by the time we, even an hour really, by the time you leave the office, set it all up, leave the office, do the inspection, come back, send it off, follow it up, etc. It's easy an hour. All of a sudden we've got 800 hours worth of work to do in a year, all because of one activity and process change. The main thing I want to talk to you about though in regards to wastage, because we could be here all day around the system piece, but streamlining your system is more around wastage around numbers. And this is, I want you to have a look at right now and work out in your business, how many spare spaces have you got in your car park? That is, how many properties could you put into your portfolio right now without requiring any additional resources? And that number is crucial because that's our first step at growth, because then we're going to be maximising the return of what you've already got. Of course, you know, you can start to look at people and systems and your expenses. Expenses, guys, if you haven't done a wastage review of your expenses this year, I need you to go and do that now. You need you to go and do that now. And that is to get a P&L and go through line item by line item and identify where the wasted expenses are. You will be so surprised about stuff that is sitting on your company credit card as an automatic debit right now, you didn't even know you had. I went back and I do this every quarter, and I went back and did this just recently. And, you know, I found things that the previous marketing manager had gone on and subscribed to that she was using for the computer software that she was doing for an event. And all of a sudden, you know, there's $150 automatically coming out each month that nobody in the team even knew what it was for, and we had to go back and work it out. Now, it does. The little pennies soon add up, okay? You're looking at time to serve, which is another number, and obviously the opportunities that we talked about there in terms of the volume of business that's coming in right now. The last thing there is around silos. Now, we did mention today about breaking your P&L down into silos. Obviously, that's very important, and we will continue to get people to do that. But then just remember that it's all about return on the overall business. So when you're looking at that, it's then what have we got? What are we getting across all of the business silos as an overall unit, and how are they helping each other? Finally, you will then start to find your levers. What are the mechanisms that you can adjust and change ever so slightly to make bigger impact to your bottom line and equally to your top line? And so it becomes what action to take to change your results. And when you've gone through all of these processes, you'll be able to see the quick lever change to make mid-month, end of quarter, 6, 9, 12, same time last year. You'll start to become less reliant on gut feel and more comfortable with the numbers and the impact that they have.
Okay, so that's it for this week. Remember, if you'd like to contact Fiona for any of those worksheets, you can get in touch with her at fiona@realplus.com.au. Catch you again soon for some more insights from our Transform Master Series. To keep up with all the latest information, visit eliteagent.com.au/transform. I'm Samantha McLean. See you soon.
Transform Masters 2017 is brought to you by Elite Agent, with thanks to Property Tree, realestate.com.au and RealPlus. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.